Morning. We have an embarrassment of riches for readings this morning. Second reading from Colossians, I will only point out to you that wonderful hymn. It's chapter 1, but Christ as the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of creation, and the firstborn from the dead. The gospel, I have to say at least a few words about. There's a lot of things that could be said about it. But I want to make one particular point. This is a wonderful spot to draw on when you're trying to answer either fundamentalists who are trying to tell you that every word of the scripture is absolutely history, and of course God made the world in 6 days, 6,000 years ago, because it says so in the Bible, or the cultured despisers of religion who say, well, what the fundamentalists say is obviously wrong, so all of religion can just be dismissed. What both of them do is to confuse history with truth. History can be true or false, just like any other kind of statement. And while much truth is historical, much truth is not. The Bible is inspired. That means it's all true. It doesn't mean it's all history. And frequently, it's not intended to be history at all, but it's profoundly true. And this, I think, is the indisputable example. The guy says to Jesus, well, who is my neighbor anyway? At that point, how many people do you think really believe that Jesus said, excuse me, would you hold that question just for a minute? A centurion, would you step over here for a minute? Would you read me that Form 95 you took on the A&R on the Jericho Turnpike at 1320 last Tuesday? He's not reading him a police report. He's making him up a story. It might as well begin, once upon a time, a man was going from Jerusalem to Jericho. So it's not history. It doesn't even pretend to be history. But it's one of the most profoundly true things you will ever hear. And this is the other indisputable part about it. It teaches the guy the truth. The truth is, stupid, your question's wrong. You shouldn't be here asking who your neighbor is. You should be asking who you can be a neighbor to. And you'll go a long time in life before you find a more profound truth than that. So keep that story in mind, whether you're talking to a fundamentalist who loves to beat on you and tell you you're going to hell because you don't believe it all literally, or a cultured despiser type who says it's all nonsense and there's the obvious reasons. Both of them are making a very simplistic mistake. And once you get that pointed out, it's unlikely that you get them to actually think, because they like certainty more than they like truth, both of them, either side. But you'll at least get them off your back. They'll go pick on somebody else for a while. The main thing, though, I want to talk about is the first reading. It's the Book of Lamentations. This is the first of the last of our summer series on the Tanakh. We got two more summers to go to finish the Old Testament, because we still have the Apocrypha, the Greek language books that the church took into the Old Testament, although they're not in the Hebrew Bible. We'll do them the next 2 years. But we're finishing up that whole right hand of the bookshelf there, all the Hebrew books, those that we haven't talked about in previous years in this summer series, we're doing now. And the first one up is Lamentations. One of the little books, only 5 chapters long. In most Christian Bibles, you find it after the prophecy of Jeremiah. In Jewish Bibles, you'll find it among the Ketuvim, the writings, towards the end. Same book. It is, as you heard, a lamentation. And it goes on like that, as a lamentation, for all 5 chapters. There's almost no glimmer of hope. There's almost no relief to the tragedy. It's just an outpouring of pain, of anger, of disbelief, of embarrassment, all poured out in very elegant poetry. It's really quite depressing to read. So why do you want to do that? Isn't life enough to get you depressed? Do you need to read the Bible to get depressed? Well, two reasons. First of all, it is short. It's only 5 chapters long. You can do this, you know. 20 minutes worth of depression you can handle. Secondly, it does have a very important truth to teach us, to remind us of. And that's that we talk to God no matter what. I mean, this is world-shattering tragedy for the Jewish people. Not just life-shattering, but world-shattering. There's a difference. We all go through life-shattering tragedy. You bury your parents. It's one of the hardest things you're ever going to have to do. But there's a certain sense of fittingness to it. It's what kids are supposed to do. And when time comes, you stand up to the pain and you do what has to be done. To bury your children, now that's world shattering. I shouldn't have to bury them. They should have to bury me. That's not fair. Well, this is that sort of thing. And this is not just defeat in battle, loss of territory, loss of prestige, whatever. The temple has been destroyed. And people pretty well understood that the promise made to Abraham was embodied in the covenant made with Moses and then fulfilled in the covenant made with David. And your son shall sit upon your throne after you, thus forever for all generations. And you will build me a house in Jerusalem, and I shall dwell there forever. Forever. When the Assyrians came and took away the whole northern 12 tribes and assaulted Jerusalem and besieged it, they didn't take it because they couldn't. Because God was defending it. And now it's gone. And the Babylonians not only won the war, took away the last of the Davidic kings into exile, carried off all the treasure, carried off all the people as slaves, tore down the walls of Jerusalem. All that would have been tragedy. All that we could have lived with. But they burned the temple. The house of God that should stand forever has been destroyed. How do you account for that? Nothing makes sense now. That was the reality we used to make sense of all the other realities. And now it doesn't make any sense. What do you do? What they do is they pray. 5 chapters worth. It's 5 chapters worth of what Jesus says on the cross. Eli, Eli, lema sabachthani. My God, why have you abandoned me? It's an important thing to remember. Because we don't tend to do that very much anymore. We think we know what prayer is supposed to be like. It's supposed to be reverence and pious and sound like this and look like that. They pray from their hearts. They pray from the depths of their souls. And they pray always. They always rely on God. And that's what gets them through. When they're angry with God. When they're depressed with God. When they're frustrated with God. And they don't mind saying so. And that's what we need to learn. Because that's how you grow in the relationship. It's also how you avoid going crazy. I'll tell you a story. Many years ago, I was working with a couple who had lost their first and only child. The age of, I think, 16 months. Sudden infant death syndrome. They were devastated. Her, I was not worried about. She was in enormous pain. But she knew how much pain she was in. She was letting her husband help her. She was letting her mom help her. She was letting me help her. She had a long, hard way to go. But I was pretty sure she was going to get there. Him, I was worried about. Because he didn't hurt. At first, I thought it was just a big macho act. You know, he was too much of a man to let anybody, even his wife or his pastor, know how much he hurt. After a while, I realized that wasn't true. He really didn't hurt. At no level of his being that he was in touch with was there any pain. And that scared me to death. I said, oh my God. That's buried so deeply it's going to eat him alive from the inside before he even knows it's there. Somehow we have to get it to the surface and get it out if he's ever going to survive. And I kept looking for a way to get a can opener in there and open it up. One night he said something and I cut him off in mid-sentence and quoted him back to himself. I said, now, if I take what you said literally, what that means is that as a result of what happened to your son, you've stopped believing in God. Is that where you are? And he bent over like I'd hit him below the belt. And then he looked up and said, no, that's not it at all. I still believe in God. It's just that right now I want to tell the old so-and-so to go such and such himself. I said, come on. He said, what? I said, let's do it. And I got up out of the chair and knelt down on the floor. His wife shot me a look, horrified, and I shot her a look like back up, lady. God bless her, she caught it. Literally, backed up out of his line of sight. And he sat there, dazed, looking. I said, come on, you're man enough. He got up out of the chair and knelt down on the floor. And I started to pray. And he started to answer me. And every time he matched me, I raised the ante. And in about 5 minutes, we were using language on God that they would not let you get away with in the wardroom of a submarine at sea. And the anger just came pouring out in waves. And behind it was the pain. And he got hit with this tsunami of pain, just collapsed on the floor. His wife got down beside him and held him, and he started to just bawl. And then I stopped worrying about him. I knew he had a long, hard way to go. But he'd be all right, because he had it out in front of him. Wasn't buried inside anymore. But what was going on, way down deep, where he couldn't even realize it was going on, is he didn't dare hurt, because he couldn't hurt without being angry. What had happened wasn't fair. But he didn't dare be angry with God. God had just taken his son. If he got angry with God, God might take his wife too. So he couldn't be angry, and therefore he couldn't hurt, and therefore he couldn't pray. When he got to be able to pray that hurt and that anger, he could heal. That's how prayer works. If we can be honest with God, then it begins to change us. Prayer doesn't change things. It's not like God reaches out and manipulates the world to give you what you want because you prayed for it. That's nonsense. What prayer does is change us. Being honest with God from the depths of our hearts, even when our worlds collapse, even when the temple has been destroyed and you see no way of making sense of anything, we talk to God about it. God is there. And because God is there, we get through it. That's an important practical lesson for us to learn, and probably worth the 20 minutes it will take to read 5 minutes of very depressing poetry. So I commend it to your attention. Can't say try it, you'll like it, but try it, you'll learn from it. Sisters and brothers, let us pray.